Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, what is up? I'm not Scott Tailford, but I am Ewan, and this is the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and today I'm joined by the venerable Josh Brown.
Hello.
And the badass Ben Roy Turner.
Hi.
Has everyone ever called you badass before?
No, literally no one ever has.
Well, there we go, because today we're going to talk about video games that are badass in their own unique way, and those are the ones that are coming back from the dead. And we kind of came up with this morning because we were talking about Star Wars Battlefront 2 for a little bit.
As you two always do.
As we always do, it's literally one of the few games that is in my rotation.
Droidicars, man. Yeah, Droidicars.
The Droidicars are in there. And, you know, it's kind of a recent trend over the past, I'd say, two, three years, where video games have kind of bucked the trend of living and dying in their first months. So we had what I think really kicked it off was Rainbow Six Siege, which released in 2015 to a kind of lukewarm reception. People kind of praised the shooting mechanics and the multiplayer, but there was never an inkling that it would become the beast that it is today. And Siege was a really interesting thing for me because I hopped into that about probably, it was a couple of months after the first DLC released, and that was a good few months into it. And then the second DLC, which had Blackbeard and Valkyrie, and then the game has just evolved so much through word of mouth, and we've kind of seen different games kind of take that approach. It's interesting because it's still the exception, because you look at games like For Honor, you know, the first Division in particular. I know the Division was a success for Ubisoft, but that player base kind of massively spiraled off.
Straight away as well. I think it was like after a month, like people realized the end game wasn't quite up to snuff, and then people tailed off massively. I think Ubisoft were better than most to commit to that still, despite the waning player base. They kind of managed to turn it around in a way, but in a way, like they sort of also lost too much momentum to do with Siege, because I think when people played Siege, a lot of us thought, well, this is a bit rough on the edges, but the core gameplay itself was great. It was just everything else bogging it down. It was like matchmaking and sort of like the lag in the games
hit
and
detection.
Like hit
and,
detection
and
stuff
Ash,
like
not
that.
Ash from What Culture Gaming, Ash from Rainbow Six.
Oh, very similar people, I suppose.
I mean, the whole thing that they took out of the ACOG Rash just still upsets me to this day. that was my whole thing.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically we're going to kind of try and figure out how video games basically survive after almost being pronounced dead on arrival. And we're going to go through different examples. We'll go through Siege first, because obviously it's the one that really, you know, kind of started this trend. Because beforehand, if you had a multiplayer focused game that didn't pick up, it didn't pick up in the first month, that would be it. We look at something like Battleborn, for instance. Even though, you know, Gearbox tentatively supported that after release, there was no chance of that picking up, because Overwatch just dwarfed it instantly. And Siege is a curious case because it had so much going against it. And like you said, the core gameplay really brought people into that. And they were always planning. They always had that first season of DLC plans. So it was always getting supported regardless of, you know, how much, you know, attention was given to it. But just how extensive the reworks were that they introduced. And, you know, some people probably complained that they probably did too much. But the actual content itself, was that what really brought people back to it, or was it just the word of mouth?
Well, I think it's a really strange one, because although it didn't completely tank with the critics, it didn't like score exceptionally well. I think a lot of it was the community and word of mouth. Like if you were playing it at launch, there was kind of a feeling of, oh, this is getting sort of like crapped on in like the mainstream media and by mainstream gamers, but there is something there. It's like something really cool that we want to cultivate. And I think Ubisoft sort of realized that too. So I do think the first DLC pack or the first season or whatever really brought players back in. But I don't think that would have been possible if not for that initial word of mouth. Like we were talking about The Division. And I think a good distinction between that those two games is that whilst The Division still came with like a wealth of post-release content, it didn't have that initial word of mouth. The people were excited for it and then dropped off, whereas with Rainbow Six, I think it was the other way around. People were sort of cards close to their chest wanting to be won over, and then it won a few of them over, and then the word started to spread, so it sort of went that way instead of that way. For people listening, I just went up with my hand and then went down with my hand.
It's a very good demonstration. I like the visual aid.
The thing about Rainbow Six is it was just kind of like uttered out in December, like mid-December, like, you go over there and just be quiet and just go away. And people started to forget about it, as you said, but it just slowly just built there and built its own little community. And you just hear things like, wait, is Siege actually good? Because a lot of us, like me in particular, were one in that story, the story about Patriots, I think it was, which was shown E3 before that, the cinematic trailer. We just never got it. And to have just a multiplayer-only game, it was back... I think back then, especially, it was like, oh, it's multiplayer only. I can't be doing with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But just grew and grew and grew. And I think the free weekends that Ubisoft do of their games as well is very smart, because that's how I got in there. I managed to get my friends to download it begrudgingly. We played it, and I was like, I'm settled. I'm buying this.
Yeah.
£25 on Amazon. That was,
I think the price point was a thing as well, because I was at uni when it came out, and we were all looking for something to play together, because I can't remember what we were kind of looking at beforehand, but then Rainbow Six came. Oh, we were playing Battlefield 1, actually.
Yeah.
I think Battlefield 1 came out around that time, and we all kind of got a little bit bored of it. And then we were looking for something a little bit more. And I played the Rainbow Six Siege beta. And that, when I played that, I was like, oh, you know, there's some interesting concepts here. But when it came out, I was like, yeah, I kind of see my fears were realized and the reviews and stuff. But then I saw it on Amazon, like you said, for like £25 or something. We all just dropped some dough on it.
Yeah.
And then we all played it together, and it suddenly became, you know, every night was Siege night, and we were all playing it over and over again.
I had more or less the exact same experience. Like, I played the beta with my friends, and we all said, oh, this is really good, really promising, we'll get this at launch date. But then because it came out in December, after when I was skint and I had like all these other games had come out, I was like, oh, I'll give it a month or so. And I picked it up in January because my friends got it as intended, and they just wouldn't shut up about it. So I thought, I want to try this out. And I was so pleased I did.
Yeah. And unlike other multiplayer games, it's got stakes, like you die, you're dead sort of thing. I love that. And it's something that you can just play with two of you, or you can have all five of you on the team. Because each person, like, see, just so great that you can just take a point and hold off five people if you've got the right operator at a certain time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about Siege, because we're going to get to these other examples in a second, but I think it's a unique entity in the sense that it never divested from its initial premise. It was always this tactical kind of semi-realistic first-person shooter that really valued team play over, you know, kind of just run and gun, you know, just running, throwing bodies at a wall over and over again and seeing who comes out on top. And, you know, you could argue that in recent updates it's gotten crazier and crazier, but it's still, the still fundamental core of that game has never changed since release. It's always been the same. Team-based, different objectives, really interesting environments and maps. You know, they've constantly reworked them as well. But some of these other games that have kind of shown a second life have done so in a more reactive sense. So I'm going to bring up Fortnite now, because Fortnite, when that was first announced at E3, that was a co-op construction survival game.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued by it, honestly. I thought, honestly, if I'm being completely honest, that first version of Fortnite appealed to me more than what it eventually became.
Coming off of Gears as well, like, I was like, what is Epic going to do next? What is Cliffy B going to bring to the world? And like, I love the whole zombie horde thing and the idea. I was like, yeah, let's get into this. When it came out, it was just kind of, did any of you play the same thing?
It was the same thing. My friends picked it up and they were like, get Fortnite, Josh, it's really good. I've just spent £70 on the deluxe edition. And I was thinking, why? I mean, jokes on them now that it's changed and it's free and it's this completely different thing. But no, I didn't buy into the hype. I thought, again, the E3 trailer looks fine, looked decent, had like an interesting premise, but the original version just wasn't for me.
Yeah. But obviously, the thing with that is that it kind of piggybacked off the success of Battle Royale and undercut the competition effectively, because it was a free-to-play game on consoles before PUBG could actually get on there.
For me, it was way like just sitting there watching all these PUBG videos, like, I really want to play this, but I don't have a good PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was my way. I think a lot of people played that because they had heard of Battle Royale and they just wanted something.
Yeah.
And at first, it was so bare bones. Mm-hmm. It was just literally, there was nothing in it. And it's crazy how much they've changed that map and how much they've added to it over time.
Yeah, I think, I agree. I resent kind of what Fortnite is as a game, and I don't like playing it. I hate the cultural phenomenon it's like become, but I can't have anything but respect for the business decisions that got them there in the first place. The idea of looking at, right, what's the newest trend? What's getting steam? It's PlayerUnknown's, like, this is the new genre. we have a game that could support that. We can transform it. We can release something bare bones. We can do it for free and get all the interest from that, from the this PC market on consoles in a more accessible way, and then we can build on it from then, which I think a lot of people tried to do afterwards, but there was only one chance to do that, and Fortnite absolutely did it, and then they continued to build upon it, because that could have just been flash in the pan. I remember playing it, and I think a lot of us were in the office saying, like,
new Pokemon Go.
Exactly, the new Pokemon Go, this will burn out, it doesn't have the content to sustain it for like the long run, but the fact that Epic have continued to plug whole new areas into this thing, whole new mechanics, whole new weapons, has really supported it. Like, that is nothing but something I can respect.
And this game, from literally in the grave, has not only just changed like games in that genre, it's basically funded the Epic Store, which is now rivaling Steam. It's literally fundamentally changed the course of gaming for like probably the next 10 years or so. It's just a bit sad that they don't have to crunch people as hard as they do to get all these content out, but it's amazing how reactive they can be and just get stuff out. It's a machine.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like it's something we're seeing more often with games as a service titles, and I know that that phrase really, you know, it will like make you go but it's one of those things that's really interesting, because obviously Siege in itself is basically a games as a service. You know, most it's been what, 4 years since the first Siege came out? In that time, about a generation ago, you probably would have been playing Siege 2 right about now, and I to be honest, I think, you know, we probably are in need of a Siege sequel, even with talk that they're potentially going to bring it to the next gen as well. And it's one of those things that's interesting, because at one time, you know, it's great that games can now adapt. You know, it's the launch isn't the end. Maybe it is for Anthem, but for other games, it's definitely not. And that's really interesting, because it has both positives and negatives, because on one hand, you have a resurgent title that can sustain itself for years upon years. But when do you decide to not pull the plug, but say, look what we accomplished here.
Yeah.
Let's just go and do an actual sequel. Where is the delineation?
It's really difficult. And I think Siege is a great example, and I think GTA Online is a really good example of like two behemoths that just keep on growing, and that neither really feel like they have an end point in sight. Like, the fact that we haven't had a GTA 6 or even an announcement of a GTA 6 is entirely down to GTA Online, I'm sure, and I'm sure that'll be the same for Red Dead Redemption as well. And that is great in a sense that I've been playing both of those games for the entire generation. I will come to define this generation by the likes of Siege and GTA Online, and I think that's a good thing. I think the amount of content I've got out of a single £50 purchase, £40 purchase, £25 purchase. I don't really buy the microtransactions in these games. I know that kind of gets you off GTA Online now, but I got a good 3-4 years of solid gameplay out of that, all for free. And I think that's awesome, but then at the same time, I'm really craving a Siege 2, although as much as I loved it, I want next gen to have a new Siege title. And I want a new Grand Theft Auto, because even going back to it now, it's fun, but As you mentioned, because the games are never finished, the development continues, but then that development sort of delivers diminishing returns, because you either get tired of the mechanics or the content itself becomes less significant.
And that's what we've seen with Overwatch, in a way, because there have been loads of talks about how the player base there is slightly declining, and you know there have been rumors that it's going to go free to play, because you know they have all the updates are free, but then we also have the whole, you know, loot box controversy, and that's interesting in itself. But yeah, it's one of those things that I find really interesting, because how do you necessarily know when to start moving ahead? Was there anything you wanted to add there, Ben Murray?
I was just going to ask, Josh, did you buy GTA again on PS4?
I got it for Christmas off my girlfriend, so technically no, but yes.
Because I don't. What about you, Ewan? Did you?
Yeah, I got it about a couple of years. I think I got it just before Heist came out.
Right.
Because that's the only thing I looked at stuff beforehand, and all the Let's Plays, Achievement Hunter did some really, really funny fake heist gameplays, just waiting for Heist to come out. They just did their own, and I thought that was hilarious. That's all I needed from GTA. And then when I got to uni, and then the heist started to come out, I was like, I'll jump in now. And then that period where GTA Online was perfect, it still had the shark cards, but it, you know, it was before the everything, you were effectively priced out for not investing in the microtransactions, and that period was
a good
really
4 years I spent in that.
Yeah.
Did my time.
4 years of it in Los Santos.
But yeah, so kind of going back to that point about games reacting, this year we've seen Star Wars Battlefront 2 embark on its own little mini resurgence, and it's one of those interesting things to me, because I got Battlefront 2 when it first came out, and I played it, and I thought, the criticisms regarding the progression system maybe potentially were a little bit too harsh. I looked at that, and I obviously everyone has their own preference for how they should level up the characters, and I totally agree that every gamer should be able to put their own agency on the playstyle that they want to, but I didn't think it was as debilitating as the controversy seemed to suggest it was. I played it, and it was perfectly enjoyable. There were definitely issues with Frostbite, even to this day. The tanks don't actually work. You go in them, and the camera is just stuttering all over the place. It is appalling. Jesus Christ.
Especially,
Frostbite.
Especially in the new, was it Conquest?
Yeah, Capital Supremacy. Yeah.
They're terrible on that.
Yeah.
But 40 hours for Vader, though, was ridiculous.
But the thing is, the way Battlefront has found a way its comeback is by tapping into a niche within the Star Wars fandom. Because it's not... whereas the first Battlefront, that managed to sustain itself for a little while as well. That was all original trilogy focused. Here they've got all the errors, but they're actually really receptive to the community. And the way this game has come is literally from dedicating to the hardcore of Star Wars fans. DICE are constantly interacting with the forums. The message from them for months after the game was released was, we want more Clone Wars, we want more Clone Wars, we want more Clone Wars.
And then
they did a massive Clone Wars update.
Embrace the memes as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello there.
Yeah. I literally spent one of the most satisfying experiences of Battlefront 2 this year was hopping on to Heroes vs. Villains after unlocking Obi-Wan and then just finding General Grievous and going, hello there. And I was like, I'm in.
And he's like, we're doing this again, aren't we, General? And he's like, oh, come here.
Oh, God, I'm back. They've got me. They've got my money again.
And the interesting thing is, like, obviously, Battlefront, it did die in that first month. You know, it was effectively... But DICE kept on plugging away at it. Like, they were just constantly CPRing this title. And, you know, the EA has loads of resources. But the way that's turned around has been by dedicating to the hardcore, a niche within Star Wars fandom, and slowly that word of mouth has filtered out, and more people are coming back into it.
Yeah, and like as we were talking a few, was it months ago, when we decided to write that article, like the 10 things they should add.
Yeah,
and then they go and add droidicars, like almost 2 years late. Is that over 2 years now?
Yes, over two years later.
Yeah. Droidicars, which is like a brand new unit that moves differently and just works so differently. Mm-hmm. Sure, they had like. Other units have had personal shields, but that's mad. Mm-hmm. And then when they announce it, and then the title is of this blog post, where are those droidicars? I mean, they know their audience, and it's so good how they've received and just turned it all around. And I think they've even taken out all options to buy any currency. You can't buy crystals anymore.
Right, okay. So I didn't notice that.
I'm pretty sure, don't hate on me if this is wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's a thing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I think it's, I think Battlefront 2 for me, that and No Man's Sky is proof that if you have a good idea and you know you got a good idea, you can resuscitate anything from out of the gate. Battlefront 2 will go down as perhaps the generation's biggest sort of like in-game controversy. That loot box fiasco was crazy. That was just when I was starting to work here, and like the amount of coverage on it and the amount of people engaging with that controversy was out of this world. Like that downvoted Reddit comment or whatever.
Oh, God, yeah.
And if you can come back from
the
that...
The crying stormtrooper.
Yeah, exactly. If you can come back from that and target a niche and really respond to the needs of that niche, I think you can bring anything around. We look at Anthem now as something that's just dying. But I think with enough sort of push behind it and with a clear focus, that could become something special. I'm not sure if EA or BioWare has that focus or that desire or even that foundation to turn it into something else, but I think that's all you need. No Man's Sky is another great example. That came out, that did its own thing. I think expectations were a little different with that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people buying it didn't expect it to be sort of like this semi-basic sort of indie title worked on by seven people. They thought it was going to be a big triple A like blockbuster, and that is down to, you know, the problems with Sean Murray, the problems with Sony's marketing, and a lot of things. But that's brought itself back by responding to the player base who did invest and who did stick around during those like tumultuous times. If you can bring those two games back, anything is possible.
That's an interesting point you raise, actually, because with Anthem especially, you know, that game did not release in a good state.
Yeah.
And if there is the chance that that game could be brought back, will there be criticisms leveled at BioWare and EA for, well, you're adding these updates to the game, why didn't it not start out like that in the first place? Yeah. It's interesting there, because maybe there is a slight distinction to be made between, you know, making a game playable and actually supporting it in the long run so that you generate enough interest. I don't know if that's certainly a thing, because I was going to mention Red Dead Online.
Yes.
Because that, in its first, I know it was in beta, but it was one of those things where I played that and I was like, why aren't you just doing GTA Online but in Red Dead? Mm. And they're slowly but surely working that in, but I'm still looking at it now, I'm like, why didn't you just have these features in mind when it first came out? Like these mechanics that you've just introduced.
This is a huge sort of point of contention for me, because I think of all the games we've mentioned so far, both the good and the bad, even Rainbow Six Siege, a lot of criticism from, like, you know, journalists at this time was that it didn't have enough content or whatever. Like, there was too few maps, there was no single player, how long could this sustain itself? And I think that's what we've seen again with Anthem. I think it is this sort of, whilst it is great that we can support games in the long run and keep them alive and make them better than ever, that only punishes people who buy day one. That only punishes the most hardcore fans who are excited about these games, because they are fundamentally getting a worse off product than if they waited 6 months or 12 months down the line. Yeah, they get to enjoy the initial hype and get to be excited about the game, but the product they're getting is kind of built with the intention of being finished later, even though they won't ever actually say that.
I don't think there's any chance of me going back to Anthem.
Really?
Yeah. I put 3 hours, might have put into it, like five maximum.
Mm. Yeah.
Just there was something about it. It's like you get to like the inside the castle, wherever it was, and you're made to walk slowly and just things there just don't need to be there. How long did you last in that game?
Like about 5 hours. I ask you this though, Ben Roy.
Yeah.
Has there been a game that you've thought that about before and you have ended up going back to it? Because I certainly have. Battlefront 2 was the big one for me.
I never thought that I would play that again. When Battlefront 2, when I just put it down, it was out of frustration that when people were just getting the random drops and they were randomly getting the better things first. It was just like, oh, just pull your hair out. When you go into it, when you can see when they're making an effort, I'll go back. But it really, I can't really think of something that I've... Because No Man's Sky, I played that first evening. Like, I put 7 hours into it that day. Never went back. I have it sitting there on my shelf because I don't really trade stuff in, but I just don't want to. I don't think there is anything really. What about you, Ewan?
I can't think of it. I didn't expect to come back to Battlefront. There was a point in time where I was contemplating trading it in because it was just sitting there and I was just like, well, I definitely enjoyed the week or two that I played it for. I really liked the campaign as well. But it was never, I never thought for a second that DICE's support would engender such a unique response, and so that's why I'm so pleasantly surprised. I think it's one of the best success stories of the past year, and one that I can definitely see growing.
Yeah.
And that's the most exciting thing for me, because the DICE are being rewarded for their diligence on this project. This is all them taking a very kind of introspective look at their franchise, catering to a hardcore, and then getting rewarded for that, which I think is an incredible story, because nowhere do you usually see developers or studios entertain that kind of audience a lot of the time. And the fact that it's worked for something as massive as Star Wars illustrates just how kind of divergent games can be, in the sense that you have all these different things at play, but if you find the one thing, it'll come back, which is very interesting.
I do love that Star Wars one, because like you said, Battlefront 1 sort of tried to be this casual experience that catered to every single Star Wars fan, and to an extent that's what Battlefront 2 tried to do, but it only found any kind of proper long-term success when it really did focus in on an audience. And I think that's what a lot of games fail to do, like the ones that have died in the past. Battleborn, Evolve, even though it's Ash Millman's favourite game. I think something like The Same Fate, there just wasn't they didn't know who they were trying to get because they were just trying to get in everyone. And that is a problem if you don't have a clear focus, if you don't have like a idea in mind, then you can support games. Like Evolve tried so many times to come back to life. It went free to play and it just didn't work because there was no real sort of central hook there. Like there was too much bad blood even before it came out.
And it's interesting because it doesn't just go to multiplayer games either. I was going to mention another Ubisoft title in Ghost Recon Wildlands because I got that when it came out as well. I thought it was a deeply flawed game, but with friends, it was very good. They've been supporting that game with the occasional kind of event update and then also loads and loads and loads of microtransactions. And to me, that's Ubisoft mistaking the message that Siege imparted. You know, Ghost Recon is to... is to single player what Siege is to multiplayer, and they should really be kind of focusing on that, maybe introducing new characters and classes as they're going along, and then maybe, you know, giving people the chance to acquire these new items that they're adding in through actually playing the game. But most of them are all locked behind the paywall, so there are definitely, even at the same time, we're kind of living in an era where we're getting all this, you know, games are kind of coming back to life. There are still the occasional examples where you're just like, well, how have you just missed the message that fundamentally?
Yeah, I mean, sorry Ben Rank.
I mean, Ghost Recon is a franchise that I'd held dear in the early days, like the really tactical ones where you'd place all your people around and you get the expansion like Desert Storm and Island Thunder. I really enjoyed that. I kind of fell off in the Warfighter. Is it Warfighter?
The
Warfighter stuff was good. Future Soldier was the Gears of War-y type one.
Yeah, and then that one really made me fall off. And then with this one, I looked at it, I was like, oh, just Cocaine Mountain, just a bunch of people. They don't look like Ghost Recon people anymore. Yeah. They're just wearing a t-shirt and they're driving around on motorbikes. Mm-hmm. But going into it, as I said in my play, it's actually such a fun experience and a bit basic in some sense, but I like that because so many things I was like, oh, I'm going to tweak this screw on my gun and that's going to add 0.5 magic to it. But being able to fight the Predator, I actually have to think about the fight and like it ruins you.
Yeah.
Or creeping into that base and finding Sam Fisher or finding Kavera and like helping them out. Like all these little things that they've added.
It's funny how that works because although I never went back to Ghost Recon Wildlands after like, I don't know, I must have played it for about, I don't even think I finished it. I played it for about 20 hours with my friend just
you
messing
fight
about.
The Predator.
Well, this is the thing, but I've kept invested in it even though I haven't been actively participating in any of these events. Every time there's a new one, when Sam Fisher comes in and when the Predator comes in, I get excited for it.
When
I watch
John
the trailers. Berntle
comes
when
in.
John Bernthal comes in, I think that's key in making me excited for Breakpoint. Because even though my love affair with Wildlands wasn't very long, it was really fleeting in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
The fact that they keep releasing these updates that interest me and that interest the player base, it makes me excited for the next game because I hope that has the same sort of attention given to it.
I was going to say maybe that's where they found the delineation between updating a game and making the sequel, because there are mechanical issues with Wildlands that you wouldn't be able to solve with a simple update, and we're seeing that kind of being introduced with Breakpoint and the ability to like the injury system they're introducing and like the camo stuff. Maybe they'll also learn the lessons and know how to focus on the event stuff in this one rather than the microtransaction stuff as well. But to kind of end on a point here, we would talking just a few minutes ago about people who how gaming effectively rewards latecomers to the game and how the hardcore people who drop in at the earliest opportunity aren't necessarily the ones that are rewarded. And one thing that I don't really see, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't really see these games as a service games going back and rewarding people who were there from the beginning. And that's like, you know, Battlefront 2 has always had this thing where if you log in, you get 500 credits free, basically. But never anything super substantial. And I would like to see games do that more often, like with Siege, when they got rid of the ACOG stuff and they made all the operators free, the first batch of operators. They didn't reimburse any renown for people that had been there from the beginning. And I was wondering how we could potentially see that dilemma being addressed on the next generation.
I have no idea, because it is a genuine dilemma, I think. The publishers and developers rely so much in that first wave of interest, because even though it's no longer as important as it was, like you still need the sales up front to sort of justify that extended cost. But then those people are both not rewarded with a complete game oftentimes. But then, like you said, they're not rewarded by sticking around with the game. Like a lot of the time in GTA Online, I would jump back in because Rockstar were releasing a free cash boost to like everyone. I would think about coming back more often to something like Siege or something like Ghost Recon Wildlands even, if there was something to reward the fact that I was there day one, if that makes sense, or have been around for a long time.
I will say though that PUBG on consoles was disgusting. Like you would fall through the world, you'd land, and no buildings were there, sort of thing. This was like this for months, but I still played it. And after the first year people were on Xbox, we got so much like reward cash that they actually gave out money to buy. They don't really have loot boxes. It's kind of just like four or five chests that you can see what's in it, and you just keep purchasing with the money that you earn in game.
Yeah.
And they rewarded people a lot for that, and they gave them some free clothes and sort of thing. And they've done that a bit on the PlayStation as well. So there is some people have done it, but I don't know why like Rainbow Six won't just go, here's a load of renown.
Here's a free skin or something. Like, you know, like it's
one my of, guys have been so basic for so many years because I refuse to spend the money on that when I can really spend the money.
I really want some of the super skins, like
The elite skins.
Thatcher, come on, Thatcher without a helmet.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting. I wish there was there is a simple answer to it, but I wonder if it's a case of people. You know, we may be seeing the negative side of games coming back to life in the sense that they want to because the initial launch wasn't as successful. They want to eke out every, you know, dime they can because even when a game is on the rise again through a resurgence, it's still very temperamental, as we've seen with Overwatch and maybe to a degree with Siege as well. Because even though it's got the professional kind of sports league, it's still, you know, it still fluctuates, and I think that's something they maybe have to bear in mind as well.
There is a game that I've remembered while talking about this that is mainly single player, but you can play multiplayer. Dying Light. That came out, and it's quite like this is a quite good game.
I love Dying Light.
I never played it until about last year with like two other friends, and they have added so much. You go through and see what they've added to it, and even recently they added this like weird pseudo battle royale mode, which never touched. But that's a game that's a single player game that somehow they have managed to just update and update and update throughout the years. This came out after Dead Island was a bit janky. They've really smoothed it out now. And this has come out before Dead Island 2. And the sequel is going to come out before Dead Island 2, which is really weird. So you don't want to know what's going on over there. But they've just supported this game so much and like really smoothed over and added so much. I'm really looking forward to the second one.
Yeah, I don't like that. You don't really get many games doing that. The weirdest one I can think of is that Borderlands 2 just got a free DLC after like 8 years, 7 years, whatever. Yeah. And that is just a pure gimmick. But at the same time, I'm kind of here for content coming out of nowhere. Battlefront. Black Ops 4. No, Black Ops 3. I will get there in the end. Black Ops 3 is sort of a good example of that when when Infinite Warfare tanked, Activision went back to the drawing board and released more DLC for Black Ops 3, even though that era had sort of ended, which was kind of unprecedented, but gave that an extended life in a way I think Call of Duty especially needs, because that 2-year dev cycle that's now in effect is going to kill it.
And even though this kind of happened before they launched, Hitman almost died. Hitman's straight away, where they had to just cancel all the pre-orders. I'm like, no, we've screwed up, we're just going to start again. And how they added maps to that game throughout the year, it was just kept going back to Hitman and I wanted to throw things at people's head, like wherever it was, like an exploding duck or something like that. Just it was so good. Bit slow on this new one, but that's a game again that they've kind of like pumped back hit life back into Hitman, because it's brought in a lot of people that never really touched one because the barrier to entry was just so like, oh, it's really easy.
Yeah, yeah. I think Hitman's actually a great example of like a single player sort of game doing that. And I think it's so unfortunate that those games didn't sell as well as they did, especially the second one. But it's just like, again, it was not the problem of the developers. They did so well to support that game and make the most of that episodic kind of structure. And then it was just kind of like the publisher and the marketing and the way it was kind of like sold to people that kind of turned them off, which is devastating when you see that amount of effort actually put into a game and it not be received by the player base.
Yeah. So to wrap things up, we may not have a definite answer for why video games keep on coming back to life on this generation, but maybe, you know, maybe we can point in the direction of hardcore communities. You know, we've seen it not necessarily with Siege, that was kind of Ubisoft's grand plan actually coming together in the long run, but certainly with stuff like Battlefront and Hitman and other stuff as well. So please let us know if you have any other games that have kind of had this miraculous comeback. Please let us know down in the comments below and on social media at What Culture Gaming. This is the What Culture is WC Gaming. I can't remember now.
Rich,
just
help
find
us.
What Culture Gaming on Twitter, please. And don't forget to support the What Culture Gaming podcast by giving a like and a share and a subscribe on the channel or on is it Acast?
Acast, iTunes,
I'm
Spotify.
I'm not Scott Tailford, so I don't know. But go on, Josh, say that again.
iTunes, Acast, Spotify. Most reputable podcast. You know, website.
That's brilliant. Yeah. That's what we are. As always, I've been Ewan. You can follow me on Twitter at Ewan Ruins Things, and I've been joined by Josh Brown.
You can follow me at Josh Brood with two O's on the end of that tag.
Ben Roy.
And you can follow me at Ben Roy Turner.
Do easy. It.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.